This is Aaron Fitzgerald with Airborne Images, and you're listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
All right, hello everybody. Hi. I didn't know we were starting. I didn't know we were starting. Someone hit the record button. The engineer hit the record button on me, and I'm a little shocked, to be honest. I'm a little shocked that we're recording tonight. But welcome into our living room, if you will, our listening center. Mike, how you doing?
You kind of sound like those like Christmas specials where the actor turns around and he's in like a smoking jacket.
That's
and he's
what
like,
I was going for.
I didn't see you come in.
That's what I was going for. Hey, didn't see you there. Well, let me tell you a story about Frosty. You know, like that's what I was going for. I think I nailed it.
It was pretty good. I would put your special on, say, like a mid-level cable channel, but I'll give you Bravo or TBS,
bro. If I could get, I'll take any network. I'll take ESPN 9. So
HGTV, sure, why not? I don't know why I'm on here, but okay.
Guys who can't build things, you know, like I'll be on it. You know, it's fine.
Today we can't build a chair. We just stare at wood for 30 minutes. Nope,
can't do it.
Still can't figure it out.
Can't do it.
Nope.
But guys, I am Scott. That's Mike down there in Georgia. We are coming to you through the information superhighway, and we're able to produce this show for you once a week here on Mondays. If you are new to the show, welcome. This is Verbal Shenanigans. Every week we try to be interesting. We try to play games, talk about life, get weird, whatever we got to do to mildly entertain you. That's kind of our motto. We are just entertaining enough to not turn us off 10 minutes in.
Our motto is, seriously, we will do anything for your attention. And yes, even that.
You want us to do a podcast on detergent? We're in. You want us to we'll do it. You want us to interview only people who grow spores in labs? We're down with that. We can do whatever you need us to do.
Scott, I figured the market we're looking for is people who want to hear about trigonometry.
Right.
I think that's our angle right now. I think that's what we should be really doubling down on.
Well, it's funny because we're just coming off our new podcast that we've been doing called the Canasta Cast, where we just podcast about playing Canasta.
Absolutely. I mean, you had me on there. I said for an hour and a half, seriously, what the hell is this game? But we kept going.
The reviews were crazy. It was amazing. It was a lot of like, what? Huh? How do I do this? You know, Alexa! You know, we got a lot of good reviews. We got a lot of good reviews on the Canasta Cast. But
I mean, I've been working on this podcast where we talk about antique silverware from Hungarian nations.
Hungarian nations.
Yeah, I said, you know what? The more I add on to this thought, the more likely I will find an audience. If you just say, I'm going to talk about silverware, it's like, there's so many silverware podcasts out there. And I'm like, okay, how about antique silverware? They're like, you get better. You narrowed it down, but you still need it. I'm like, all right. Hungary.
This is a great
antique silverware.
This is a great experiment. If you like, if you put out one podcast like per month or whatever on the most random subject, would you have a bigger audience than us in the first? Like, we could put two words together, like, oh, Austrian Tupperware. Like, would you be able to find more listeners than we have with that very specific audience? And the answer, folks, is yes.
Absolutely.
Every single time.
I'm going to do a podcast about the exotic fruits of Africa.
Leather belts through the years. What is this cast about? You know?
Oh, wackiness.
But yeah, guys. So welcome to the show. We're getting closer to episode 300 here. Which is a big episode. You should see what Mike has planned. You've been writing for what now? 2-3 years for episode 300?
What's up now?
You've been writing like all your bits and things like that for like 2-3 years now leading up to episode 300?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, the stuff you're going to drop on them in a couple episodes is going to be just epic. It's just going to be mind-blowing.
Yeah, yeah. It will not be everything else I've ever done on this show. Absolutely not.
No.
It's not another 32-person tournament to see who comes back to life. No.
Mean Gene, baby! Mean Gene! I can't wait till you're like... Scott, it's March, and you know what time it is. We take all the dead people over the last 5 years, put them in a 128-person tournament, and see what happens.
Scott, no. You were thinking of the NCAA Bring to Life tournament. We're doing the NIT tournament tonight.
Chewbacca versus Kimbo Slice. How do I decide? How do I decide?
Oh, man.
But I guess I'll jump into this real quick. I was at the store the other day. I was at the grocery store, and there was like a group of like young kids, probably, I don't know, maybe 15, 16 years old, maybe younger, around that age. What I can guess was about that age. And I hear one of the kids saying to the other kids, like, yo, like they had their phones out, of course, like yo Denise or whatever her name was, Danielle, whatever, yo, she said she'd be down to play Spin the Bottle. I'm like, wow, Spin the Bottle still around. Spin the Bottle, I remember when I was a kid, and I remember even hearing the mention of Spin the Bottle at like some birthday party or something like that. I was like panic struck thinking of even participating in that game. I remember being like, kids actually play this? And like, you know, the cool kids would be like, yeah, we're going to play Spin the Bottle with Suzanne and Monica down in the other room if you guys want to come down. I remember being like, I just want to go swimming, like, or play, you know, like play pinata. I was so... like, not into that kind of thing. Did you ever have an experience with this?
Never played Spin the Bottle. I do know, I remember, like, I think it was, like, in the fifth grade, and we were on this, like, long bus trip to, like,
okay,
Pennsylvania.
I'm already interested.
Yeah, I think... seeing something historical in Philadelphia. I don't know what thing. Something with Washington, I guess, or the Liberty Bell or whatever. But I remember some like a random game of just, somebody would say, all right, your choice is to kiss is like blah, blah, and blah. And that was going on. Like I was in the group, if you will. But I kept on getting rejected, if I do recall. I think at one point they literally said Burloo or the seat, and one girl kissed the seat, if I do recall. So my confidence was way high that day. Like, way good.
I'm thinking of those, like, they're not even like leather. They're kind of like a faux leather that's on those bus seats. Yeah. Sometimes they throw some duct tape on there. I'm picturing her like... looking at you looking at the seat, looking at you, and be like, ah, yeah. Screw it, I'm kissing the seat.
Yeah, and when we're talking about, like, school buses, you know they don't go in and, like, wipe down or mop or anything like that. That was more appealing to old little Mikey boy in the fifth grade and all
them. I'd rather kiss at the seat. So, yeah, yes.
How'd the seat get to second base before me?
Okay, so I guess maybe we were in maybe similar. I was like, when it came to those kind of things, I was always like, I don't know, maybe this is my mom's fault or just I don't know how I was just always like, mom wouldn't approve. Like, oh, it upset my mom if she'd find out. She would not be happy if I was playing spin the bottle at Susanna's house. You know, like I was always very like conscientious of like what my parents would think. And I don't know how that was put into my brain, but it was somehow.
I just imagine a scene, you're like in the circle and some girl that you have a crush on spins a bottle, and as you can see, it's like slowly about to point to you. You panic and you pick up the bottle and just like throw it to the floor and it's the glass goes into her eyes. He's like, I'm sorry. I like you a lot. And then run out of the room.
You see me panic and tilt the bottle to one of my best friends and just smooch him and run out the door. I remember
the bottle at a chair and it's like, oh, that guy gets all the action.
Here's how like scarred I was by these kind of things. I remember I was at this girl Susanna's party and she had always had this big crush on me where she like would chase me on the bus and stuff like this. And this is like fifth, sixth grade. And we went to her birthday party. And it was like a swimming party. She had a pool. And I had caught wind that they were playing like Spin the Bottle or 7 Minutes in Heaven or whatever it was, like in the closet. And I had like ran away and was like playing in the pool, like diving with my like two nerdy friends or whatever. And I remember sitting on the diving board, and there was this girl like Monica or whatever, and I'm sitting on the edge of the diving board, and I remember her being like, oh, man, I can see your penis. And I was like, no. And I thought, like, I was like, I think she was just messing with me, and I didn't pick up on it at all. And I was like, for weeks going back to school. Meanwhile, there's kids inside, like, making out, like hooking up with girls and doing whatever. And I'm sitting there scarred by the fact that a girl may have seen my wiener through my basketball, through my swim shorts.
You panic again, then you throw a bottle at her. Every time this Brennan kid gets invited over, no kids go to the emergency room. You know?
So I was thinking, Berlew, I wanted to look up how, you know, I wouldn't want to grow up in these times. I really wouldn't. I'm glad we grew up when we did because I think we got a nice dose of in between no technology and then having like we had like a nice divide of I remember stuff, no phones, the first computers, mm-hmm. And you see where you are. Like a lot of the kids growing up now are not going to have any – it's never going to happen. It's not going to they're not going to have no phones ever. They're not going to – they're going to be born into technology is what I'm saying.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I'm a little weirded out by you hearing like some kid talking about, oh, man, we're going to play Spin the Bottle. In this day and age where they have every ounce of information on there and they probably have seen things that it took us to like 13 or 14 with the scrambled TV,
yeah,
or finding the nudie magazines in the woods.
Right.
They're basically just seeing full-on sex on the internet. I'm surprised that like in this day and age that Spin the Bottle is still like a "ooh, we can do this" kind of deal.
Well, it's funny you say that because what I did, I looked up some some kissing games that kids play today that maybe we didn't experience, that maybe are new versions of games that maybe, you know, if we were back in that time, we might experience right now today or if they happen to us. And I thought we might find these interesting. There's 10 of them. One of them is Spin the Bottle. So there's really 9 of them. Would you like to hear some of these, Berlew?
I guess it's going to be kind of boring if I tell you no and we just sit here for an hour.
It'd be pretty funny if you're like, no, and I just hear the dial tone.
What we got, Scott?
All right. The first one, Mike, you ever heard of kissing tag?
Kissing tag? Can't say I do.
So we're going to build our way up to from most innocent to maybe a little naughty here on Verbal Shenanigans.
Oh, okay.
You know, we don't go blue very often, but, you know, here we go. all right, where'd kissing tag go? I lost it. Oh, kissing tag. Okay. It's like regular tag, only when you catch someone, you have to kiss them. Seems pretty innocent to me. If there's enough light and enough space to play tag, things can't get too intimate. It seems like it's a better source of cardio than kissing. So, Mike, if you're playing tag, you got to just kiss the person that you are tagging instead of... So this is very like... this game wouldn't fly too well in the current climate we're in, I would say. You can't just force...
Probably not. Like, the randomness of, I can just chase you and kiss you because we're playing a game. I got a feeling somebody would be like, well, no.
I feel like that was also Harvey Weinstein's defense.
I feel like you just ran into my house and just said... you're it.
Harvey Weinstein used the same defense. I didn't know we were playing kissing tag, you know?
Yeah.
It's a game.
Gwyneth Paltrow loved it.
It's a game in Hollywood, you know? All right. Bro, you ever play Post Office?
No, that sounds interesting.
Okay. As far as kissing game goes, Post Office is comically tame. If you're not familiar, Post Office is a game when someone goes out of the room, then knocks on the door pretending to be the postman. Someone else from the room comes to accept the letter and pays for it by kissing the postman. It's so hokey and simplistic, you think they'd wrote it out of an episode of Glee.
Like, what kid is like, well, it's Saturday night, but I guess they're delivering me the mail.
And what kid has to pay for the mail? Pay for the mail. Like, it's in your mailbox, you know?
You're getting 55 cents worth of smooches, young man.
All right. Burlew, this one's got a rough title, but it's not as bad. It's called Suck and Blow. Suck and Blow. You ever hear this one?
Technically, I've heard of it, but probably not the way you're going to describe it.
So this involves passing a piece of paper from mouth to mouth, only using suction. If it falls, you now kiss the person who is passing it to you. So, Burlew, if you mess up, you're kissing the person. So I'm sure a lot of guys who played this would be like, oh, lost the paper, got to kiss me.
This sounds like a Double Dare game where they said, all right, we got to end the show.
Mark, you've lost your mind.
We were doing so well, and then Nickelodeon turned on episode 241, and it was over.
But if we slime them, it's funny, you know? It's funny. Yeah. All right, so that's Suck and Blow. How about Hide and Go Get? Hide and Go Get.
Sounds like kiss and go seek, but go on.
I guess so. So one gender went out and hid. The other gender then had to find him. So girls go hide. The boys are coming for you.
Yeah, this sounds like something from Revenge of the Nerds. Yeah. I don't think it's going to fly in these day and age.
Why it would lead to occasional isolation between two people? These moments never last that long. The game had to continue after all. The mere incorporation of a hide-and-seek puts it on this side of the innocence scale. So basically, you would have to find them and kiss them for them to be caught.
But still, is there the whole, like, timeout? Kind of it's like, oh no, little Billy's coming after me. No.
I'm guessing though, like, if you were, you know, you were attracted to Susie was attracted to you, this might be an excuse to get that first kiss. Yeah. In like, oh, I'm gonna catch you. Oh, why are you hiding out in plain view? I can't believe you saw me.
I just feel bad for the fat kid. He's like, I just want a kid. Slow down. The only thing that touches my lips are cupcakes.
Spin the Bottle was the next one. So we'll skip ahead to apple biting. You ever hear of apple biting?
I got a feeling if I go on Urban Dictionary, there's going to be a different definition, but continue, Scott.
So in this game, you take a bite of an apple, then pass it with your mouth to the next person who also takes a bite. The apple keeps going around until it gets to be virtually nothing, and everyone's kissing both people next to them, divided only by the remains of an apple core. This is one good way to get kisses and communicable diseases.
Yeah, if I was playing it, the girl would probably put a watermelon out there just to ensure I would get nowhere near her.
I'm getting there.
Goddamn rhyme.
That is gross, man. Imagine eating that. It's like eating like two animals going, like two pigs fighting over an apple. Like that. That is not a cool game. There's nothing romantic about that.
No, and if anything like chicken pox or the cold out there, man, you're going to take out a whole school.
Yeah, yeah. Burlow, did you ever play Wink? You ever play Wink?
I don't believe so.
All right, well, if someone wasn't kissing the seat, they might play this with you.
Okay.
Wink is a game where a guy sits on one end of the room and on the other side, a girl sits facing him. Other guys sit behind the girls, hugging them. When the lone guy winks at a girl, it's her job to fight her way across the room to him. While the guy hugging her is supposed to do everything he can to hold her back. If this game sounds like it leads to rug burn at best and preteen training for domestic violence at worst. Yeah, it sounds like that to me. So basically, they have to pretend to hold their back instead of releasing the other person on you.
It sounds like an American Gladiators game. I just see like Zap holding on to somebody with a flag on the other side worth 20 points.
Was Zap who we had on the podcast?
Yeah, that's who we got on the podcast.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Sorry, Zap. Zap, you were... Zap was possibly in the category of worst guest of all time, which we one day we'll do.
Yeah.
One day we'll do top five worst. Burlew, 7 minutes in heaven, this game frightened me. I never played it. It was too afraid, too awkward for me. Are you familiar?
I'm quite familiar with that one.
Oh, all right, all right. You're like, you ain't going to be kissing the seat. You'll be kissing me in the closet. So, 7 minutes, Burlow. Now, I don't know if you've made out with your significant other lately, but 7 minutes is a long time. Now, picture 7 minutes with somebody you don't even know. You know, someone maybe you're not even interested in, and they're just like, yeah, get in there and figure out what happens. I would go out on a limb to say that a lot of people didn't do anything in that closet. They just sat there and pretended.
Oh, I guarantee you there was plenty of moments where like, all right, let's just make some kind of sounds, like act like it, maybe kiss your own arm really loud, and like everybody outside going, woo. Meanwhile, you're just going through coat pockets, seeing if you can get some change.
These are savage games, by the way. These make me feel awkward now. Like, I still feel like reading them, I feel a little on edge, like, ugh, you know, like kind of like, gross about it now. Like, yuck. Like, I would never want to do that.
Yeah, it's kind of like what you said. Like, even with, like, if I'm 7 minutes of heaven with my wife, I'd still be kind of like, all right, do we have to do stuff for the entire 7? Or,
what do we do with the other 6.5?
Do it? I mean, maybe we talk about our taxes? I don't know.
Number two was Truth or Dare, which we're all familiar with.
Obviously. Okay.
Now, this one, Burlew, this is the last one here. It's called Jelly Bracelets. You ever played Jelly Bracelets as a kid?
It sounds like Charlie's Nightcrawlers game, but
no, I clearly never played this game. But apparently, we're old men now. So,
yeah,
the idea of girls wearing jelly bracelets for more than just a fashion statement is one of those "oh my god, you won't believe what kids are doing" tactics by the media. That resurface every once in a while. The jelly bracelet scare is right up there with the media / parents worrying that kids are huffing cat urine, listening to music with hidden satanic messages, or, you know, spreading HPV. But here's how the game works, according to the internet. So girls wear different colored jelly bracelets that represent different acts, from yellow bracelets, which means hugging. So if you were wearing a yellow bracelet, we'd hug. Purple bracelets, which is like, okay, we're allowed to kiss, and blue burlo. Well, you can imagine what blue is. You can just imagine what blue is. It's a little bit more sexual, if you will.
Is it sex?
Can you imagine? Like, put yourself. Like, I'm almost getting a little, like, sweaty in my brow right now when talking about this. Because it's so, can you imagine being like, you're wearing a yellow bracelet, want a kiss? And they're like, get away from me, creep. Like, oh, you're wearing the blue one. You think all the guys aren't tackling the girl wearing the blue bracelet at that age or whatever the age they are? Like, where you are just looking for any interaction with human beings? Unless you're hiding in the pool while this is going on, working on my can opener.
Well, just imagine, like, the parent that just, like, oh, Terry loves blue-colored things. You know, let me get her this bracelet. And all. Meanwhile, half the football team is trying to dive after her because they know what that means.
Tackle drill, you know. But, yeah, Berlo, so times are changing. I mean, I feel just as awkward looking at these things and reading them, because I feel for that underdog or that kid that's like not ready for any of that at that age, and then the kids who are way more advanced. That's like an awkward period of time.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard, and nowadays, I mean, I think we're a little bit more closed up where we can't even like the kids can't even like naturally just try to progress, even like just trying to sneak a kiss and see if the girl's into it. I think nowadays and all, you pretty much get expelled from school or something
the other side of that is like everything you do now, someone's probably like recording it and taking a picture of it, you know, like, I don't know. I would never want to grow up the way kids, they never get to turn it off. You know what I mean? Like, you know, like when you went home from school, you were home, right? You didn't have to see those jerks or whoever till the next day. Like, no matter how bad it was, you were able to be like, okay, I'm home with my family. I could be weird. I could play video games. I could do whatever I want. Now it's like they're constantly just connected with one another, connected. Like, you know, it never goes away. So Mike at school was like a jerk, but all of a sudden now we're on these group chats and this and that. And so you can't ever completely disconnect. And I think it's like so much fakeness up front. Like, you're just throwing out like everything to kind of protect yourself. And that's why I think kids are like very vulnerable to like, you know, anxiety and panic and things like that. Cause they're always assimilating to the public they're with.
Yeah, there's no brain turn off. There's no, all right, I don't have to worry about this. And you just, everybody knows what everybody's doing at every moment in time. So it's, and then when you figure in a prepubescent mind who still growing, you don't even know what the right answer is. It's hard for these kids and all, whether they don't know what they want, they don't know what they like, they deal with peer pressure.
Yeah, dude, like,
it's tough.
You don't know who you are, like, until, I gotta say, I didn't feel comfortable in my own skin until late 20s, maybe? Like, real comfortable, okay. Like, where I felt like, okay, this is exactly who I am. Like, maybe 27, 28, like, you imagine kids 14, 15, like, trying to always pretend that things are cool, and they're, like, without being able to shut off, like, dude, I remember in like middle school, 7th, 8th grade, me and my friends were still playing with like action figures. Can you imagine like like them like taking pictures and sending it to everybody? We would have been like devastated, you know?
No, you're playing with action figures. Meanwhile, old Jessica's coming over showing off her blue bracelet and you're like,
Yeah, yeah.
I guess that's cool.
It's tough. It's tough. It's tough. But I guess that's a natural segue. It's always the hardest part of our show. Like, yeah, sometimes we talk like close to what's coming on, but we, it's like, how are we going to go from this to our guest tonight? But, Berlo, who we got?
Today we're going to be talking with Aaron Fitzgerald, Scott. He is
the sixth president
pilot
of the United States.
No, I don't think that was him. No, no. He's an aerobatic pilot. He's a part of the Red Bull helicopter team, the Flying Bulls, and is the founder of Airborne Images, providing helicopter aerial filming for movies, TVs, and action sports. So we're going to be talking to him about doing stunt work in helicopters.
Yes. Yeah, I watched some of this guy's videos. They're pretty wild, man. It's flying helicopters upside down and all sorts of different things. So let's give Aaron a call.
So, Aaron, I mean, helicopter flying stunts, it wasn't in your blood to do, like, filing and paperwork and stuff like that?
Apparently not, no. I never pursued that path for a career.
So, the easiest thing we always got to do is go right to the beginning. And all. I mean, did you have a background in, like, airplanes, or were you just, like, a regular helicopter pilot? How do you, like, take the step above where you're doing some of these crazy stunts in front of, like, the Empire, the Statue of Liberty in New York City?
Yeah, I got really lucky there. Isn't that amazing? I can't believe they let me do that. But to answer the question, yeah, I started out flying helicopters. That's all I wanted to do. I never really had an interest in airplanes, so I flew helicopters for about 20 years before I started flying airplanes too, and now I fly both, and I love both, but my true love and the foundation of my career is helicopter flying.
So what did you like come out of a high school wanting to fly planes? Helicopters, and did you go through like the normal approach by just taking lessons or whatnot, or was this like were you just gung-ho right out of school, like, okay, I'm gonna fly helicopters?
It wasn't a direct path. I graduated from high school, and then I went to Canada and played hockey for a little while, and then when it became glaringly obvious that I was never going to go to the pros, I joined the Army. So I was in the Army till about 1994, but I didn't fly in the Army. I was actually a paratrooper. So I rode around in helicopters, and I enjoyed it a lot, and I was always very interested in helicopters. It was always my ambition, but I didn't pursue it for real until I got out of the Army. And that was in early 1994.
So how does one, like, how do you start with a helicopter? Is it like you go sign up for lessons and you got to start doing air hours and whatnot? We know when people get their pilot's license. What is the process from that you started with to say, okay, I got to take this step into doing what I want to do?
It's actually really simple, and anyone can do it, or most people can do it. It's not easy, but it's simple. All you have to do is go to an airport that's near you that has a helicopter flight school, and there are more than you'd think. It's really easy to find one. Just do an internet search, and you can find a helicopter flight school in your area. And then you go and tell them you want to do what's called a discovery flight, and they'll take you up for about a half an hour in a little training aircraft, a little tiny one, like a two-seater. And they'll let you fly, and you'll kind of get the very, very rudimentary basics of flying and see if you like it. And then if you do, like you said, there's some groundwork, some, 40 hours of class work you have to do. You have to do 40 hours of flight work, and then you're eligible to take what they call your private pilot check ride, which is the first step in getting all licensed up to where you can go do it for a living.
Got it. 40 hours, and I could be flying upside down doing stunts. Not bad. Not bad.
Wait, you added an extra element in there. That takes a little longer.
Your answer is so confusing there, Aaron. I don't know.
Sorry.
So when you're getting started, you love helicopters. Did you instantly say, I want to take it to the next level, or did you go into it saying, maybe I'll make tours or do other stuff?
No, that was a long evolution, and they don't really offer you that job until you have a lot of other experience. So I started out, flying traffic helicopters over Los Angeles and then news helicopters, and then I got into filming because I, in flying news helicopters, I kind of discovered that I really love flying camera systems, and that led to all the production work that I do, meaning film and television work. And I started a company that provided that service to film studios and TV shows and whoever else. And in that capacity, I started working a little bit for Red Bull. And that's when I became familiar with their aerobatic helicopter program. So I filmed my predecessor and some of who are now my teammates doing the aerobatic helicopter work. And I never really had an aspiration to do it. It just looked crazy. And it was fun to be in the camera helicopter flying around, chasing them through the sky while they did all that. And then about 3 or 4 years ago, they offered me the job if I wanted to train and join them. And I said, yes, of course. So that's kind of how it went. That was about a 20-some year process, but that's the simplification of how I got from A to B.
So now I look on your website, and you've done a few things with a friend of ours who's been on the show a few times, Kirby Chambliss.
Oh, my God. Yeah, he's the greatest. That dude is one of the best pilots that ever flew. He's my teammate, but I mean, I'm a huge fan of his, too. It's amazing working with him.
Yeah. We've had him on twice. We love talking to the guy. He's just like a really interesting, down-to-earth guy. I mean, I see you doing these videos where you're flying helicopters. You guys look like, in the videos, it looks like you can basically touch each other. You're so close. It's like, how do you guys even go about, like, okay, like, I was looking at the one where you're following this car and there's planes flying. How do you even go about trying to plan this? Do you guys have, like, meetings, like, okay, like, this is how it's going to go? Do you talk it out in the air? What is the process for making something insane like this?
We do every step that you just talked about. We start out with an idea, you know, the napkin phase where somebody draws it out, and that might occur, you know, in a bar or somewhere, wherever that happens, wherever the idea strikes. We call that portion the factory of bad ideas. And then once we kind of lay it out on paper, what we want to do, then we start to kind of look at the plausibility. You know, is this something that we can, you know, put together a reasonable budget for? And if we get approval to go forward, then we start working out, okay, how do we make this happen? And if it's like the video I think you're referring to is called Chain Reaction, where we were chasing race cars and Kirby in the New Mexico at Moab, which was amazing. That video is so cool. It was so fun to shoot. We were out there for 5 days in the freezing cold, and it was just beautiful. But then, you know, you progress from one step to another. Once you get approval, you decide you're going to do it, then you lay it all out and go, okay, where do we want to get this shot? How do we do that? Can we fit a plane through here? How close can we get to this car safely? And we kind of work our way into what we want to do, and it turns out cool. But, you know, obviously you do it in a semi-safe way, as safe as you can make something like that. We work our way down to lower and lower altitudes until you see the result. What, you know, what you see on the screen is the last evolution of working toward what we want to do.
Yeah, it's wild, man. It's really cool checking out all those things come together.
Oh, it's so much fun. I mean, I'm talking about how we're all methodical and we plan carefully, and we do, but in the end, it's just so much fun to go out there and zoom around and have Kirby doing barrel rolls around the helicopter, and I'm upside down and he's upside down. I mean, it's just many times a day we look at each other and go, you guys, this is our job. We're getting paid to be here right now.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I'm one of the luckiest guys on earth.
So let's talk about the equipment for a little bit. How does your equipment when you, like, fly for Red Bull and do these stunts differ from, say, like, your traffic copter or when you started out?
The one I used to do stunts, it was built by a company called MBB, Messerschmitt Bolkow Bohm, and they built it for the German Army, and they meant it to be kind of an attack helicopter, a light utility helicopter. So they wanted to be able to fly fast, high-speed nap of the earth, down low, as fast as they could go. So in order to do that, you need to pull a lot of positive G's when you go up over an obstacle, and then you push over the top of it to dive back down to get undercover again. And when you push over, you get zero G or negative G even. So they needed to build a transmission system and a rotor system that was robust enough to handle that G load, the big variations in G loads from positive to negative. And so they designed what they put into the BO-105, and then we were able to use that for what we do with it. So in that sense, it's very, very different from a conventional helicopter, but it works the same way. You know, you have two engines driving a combined gearbox, transmission, rotor system. They're all very, very similar, but that one, that particular model is built in such a way to allow us to do a lot more with it than you can do with a normal helicopter.
So now, you know, I'm looking at your website, and I could click on any one of these things and talk to you about, you know, all of them in different ways. Does this work like, is it kind of like a, almost like a freelance thing where one thing rolls into another? Like, hey, we need you to do film these guys jumping out of planes. We need you to film Kirby. Or are you under kind of like a contractual work to do these things a certain amount of times per year?
Well, the only contracted work I have is the aerobatic helicopter performances that I do for Red Bull. So okay. those are the air shows and right. things like the New York video you referred to. But all the production work, when we're filming things and flying around with camera systems, that's all individually booked jobs. So I get calls or emails from either a studio or a production company or whomever, racing team, whoever needs aerials, and they'll say, hey, this is what we need on this date in this location, and then my company puts together the whole package. So we'll get a helicopter that's as close to, you know, exactly what we need in the closest location we can. We ship out camera gear. We bring out camera guys. And I usually go out and fly it myself, or if I can't, one of my colleagues does. And we put together the whole aerial package. And that's kind of what we do. And each job is individual.
That's sick.
Now, are you able to enjoy these events that when you're riding the helicopter and recording, are you able to enjoy it? Like, I saw you did, like, the Super Bowl, an amazing race and stuff like that. Can you sit back and, like, watch the views of what you're doing, or is it just pretty much you have to stay completely onto the helicopter?
It really depends on what the event is. You know, I do a lot of work with Red Bull, so whenever they're involved, the fun factor goes up for sure. but all the events, I mean, it's cool to look down out of the helicopter and you're looking at a stadium where they're playing the Super Bowl. That's really cool. That never gets old. So you don't get to enjoy it in the way the fans do or the players do or anybody else that's involved. But in our way, it's really enjoyable to me. It's not the normal experience for sure. For sporting events and things like that, if we're covering a race, you know, we're really busy and working really hard, and it's a long day, but it's really fun. And then other events, I live in an air show, for instance, I do the aerobatic display, and then I'm kind of off duty and in the crowd for the rest of the day, and that's a ton of fun.
So the air shows, how does one go from, okay, I'm doing film, I'm a traffic copter, whatever, you know, the things we think of a helicopter doing, how does one take the step from going, you know, almost from work to being able to, okay, now I'm going to try to fly this thing upside down.
Well, I was trained how to do that part of it. So that was, like I said, a methodical evolution. So I learned from a guy named Rainer Wilke. He's a German Army test pilot and demonstration pilot. So he was the one that kind of really advanced the art of helicopter aerobatics. And I'm really fortunate that I got to learn it directly from him. So that part of it I learned from him, but the part that you may be referring to, going from working on a small crew in the middle of nowhere, where at the end of the day they kind of go, okay, that was good, let's hit the hotel, to right. doing, you know, performing in front of 2 million people, that's a very, very different enterprise. And it's a little nerve-wracking in the beginning. I'm used to it now, but I remember in the first few shows I would look at the crowd and go, oh my goodness, that's a lot of people. I have to go do this in front of everybody.
What could be nerve-wracking about flying a helicopter upside down? Like, what are you afraid of?
I'm upside down, but there's so many people here, I'm shy.
It's pressure, but in a good way. You know, it's I think people that perform on stage, whether they're actors or musicians or whoever, anytime you have a lot of eyeballs looking at you, it kind of heightens your senses and sharpens your concentration and increases your adrenaline just a little bit.
For sure.
Now, with these stunts, is there any advantage to being in a helicopter versus an airplane? Because it seems like if something stalls in the helicopter, you don't have many options left.
Well, yes. There are some catastrophic failures that can occur that would be, you know, the end of your day, and there wouldn't be much you could do about it. But for most emergencies, if you have a tail rotor failure, if you have an engine failure, transmission failure, there are things you can do, and there are emergency procedures. You can get yourself on the ground safely. So it's surprisingly much safer than you'd think. You know, don't forget, when if we have a single engine helicopter and you have an engine failure, you can still land in a relatively small space. I can put it into a normal traffic intersection, or, you know, if you're having a good day and you're real sharp and the wind's favorable, you can get it into a spot as small as a tennis court, whereas an airplane needs, right, you know, a runway or a long straight road or something. So it's kind of two sides of the same coin. In the helicopter, we can get it in a smaller place, but everything happens much faster because we're usually much lower. So you hear a loud bang, and then you pick a good spot, get it on the ground, the whole thing's over in 30 seconds, hopefully. So, and then you have three results. You either make a minor mistake and nobody notices, or you make a mistake where you got to call the mechanic, or there's a big, glorious fireball, and it's all over.
I got to ask you, you've done so many different things, like everything from nature to working with celebrities, doing movies. Is there an event that stands out above the rest where, you know, you probably love them all like your children, but is there something that you still... You know, you still today can't believe you were able to do with this career.
Oh, absolutely. The one that stands out more than any other, everything I've ever done, the one event that I wish I could do every day was when my friend Luke Akins jumped out of an airplane at 25,000 feet with no parachute on and landed in a net. So I was an aerial.
That. I was trying to get on this show.
That was crazy. I'll call him if you guys want to talk to him. He's an amazing guy. And he's really charismatic and fun to hang out with. But that stunt was just unprecedented feat of you know, human athletic ability and bravery and concentration and anything else. I mean, it was just a little bit of everything. And we worked on it for a long time. It took us about a year and a half to test out all the systems and get everything coordinated. And as the aerial coordinator for that, I was the one who had to get the approval from the FAA. So you can imagine that first meeting. Talk about the factory of bad ideas. It was pretty funny. They sat back with their arms folded and just stared at us after they heard our presentation. But they ended up being great, and it worked out really well. And, obviously it was a happy result, but there was more tension than I thought. You know, you work towards something like that. We get closer to the event every day, and you don't realize the pressure you're under until he hits the net safely, and then you realize that you were under a tremendous amount of stress.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to throw my friend out of a plane. I can't imagine them receiving that pretty well. Like, oh, yeah, go ahead, you know.
Yeah, I was in a helicopter. We had two helicopters and two airplanes up at that time during the jump, and I was flying the high helicopter, so he basically went right by me.
That's crazy.
Did you wave?
Yeah.
No, my hands were full.
It's such incredible stories and watching your videos and everything. Like, when you're not in a helicopter, are you like an adrenaline junkie? Or are you like a laid back, I read a book in my lazy boy and enjoy the evening kind of guy?
Somewhere in between. I don't like to sit still. In fact, the whole time we've been talking, I'm pacing back and forth. That's just kind of how I am. But I
It'd be
do
funny
like,
if you were
I,
like,
I live,
yeah, I'm upside down in the helicopter as we're speaking right now.
Yeah, I'm out in my plane doing loops while we're talking. No, I like to fish. I ride dirt bikes with my kids. You know, I fly my little airplane around. I do a lot of normal type stuff too. I live at the beach, so I get to go out on the beach and enjoy that. So I'm not really a lazy boy guy, but I'm also not a total adrenaline junkie. I don't go out trying to injure myself.
Your kids must have the best time at school when they're like, well, what does your dad do? Well, you know, my dad's an accountant. My dad's that. Well, my dad flies helicopters upside down.
I actually, when my kids were little, I have two sons at home, a 13-year-old and a 15-year-old. And when they were little, I used to kind of give them a little pep talk about that too, because they'd go to, you know, preschool or first grade or whatever, and they first thing out of their mouth, what does your dad do? And then, yeah, well, my dad's a helicopter pilot. I was like, you guys, no one's going to like you. You got to tone that down a little bit. So now they hold it in a little, I think.
This might be a stupid question. So with the production now and the advancement of, like, how good drones are becoming and whatnot, does that impact the helicopter shooting at all? Like, as far as, like, I see so many documentaries now, they're filming with drones and the ability to go kind of anywhere without having to really have a pilot.
For sure, that has affected the industry, and in a good way. There's room for drones, obviously. They have their purpose, and we have our purpose. There's some overlap, sure. Just today on a scout that I was on for something we're shooting, they were talking about flying a drone around where we're flying the helicopter, so we had to work it out a little bit. But in the beginning, when those first kind of started to proliferate, it was a huge impact because it was a new thing and everybody wanted to use a drone instead. And then that kind of tapered off, and now the drone community, the drone operators have sort of found their niche, and we all end up working together quite a bit. A lot of guys that I work with also operate drones too. So we work together. It's all happy until one of them runs into me.
Have they ever proposed a stunt for you to attempt that you said, like, no, it can't be done? Or is there any stunt that you say in the back of your head, man, I would love to figure out how to do this?
There's never been one where I said, no, that's a terrible idea. There have been a few where we might have reached a little too far, and you start to kind of do the math and figure it out and go, well, I don't know that we can really do that. So, you know, the answer is always yes until you hit a hard no. So there's a couple that we're kind of cooking up right now that are going to be great and very impactful. So you just work through the from concept to the, you know, engineering, math, and science thing. Is this physically even possible? And if it is, what are the parameters and how risky is it? And can we do it? And is it safe and sort of legal? Legal-ish?
Legal. You just go back in that same board. Now, hear me out. I know we're talking about throwing my friend out of the helicopter without a parachute, but hear me out this one.
I'm not sure those guys would let me back in the building after that one. I might have taken a few years off of their lives there.
So is there anything that you can tell us that fans could expect or things that are coming out soon that are in the future for Airborne Images?
We've got a couple movies coming out this year that I worked on. We filmed a whole bunch of episodes of TV and all that. But stunt wise, there's one that's going to be going down probably in the springtime sometime. So keep an eye out for it. It's going to be called Ghost Rider, and it involves two airplanes, two pilots, and a midair switch, a swap.
Jesus.
The two pilots. They're gonna get out of the planes in free fall on the vertical axis, switch planes, and then get in the other plane and level out.
So you really dialed it back this
time,
huh?
That's my life. Yeah. Now I have to coordinate that. My friend comes to me and says, here's what I want to do. And I go, great. Let me follow you around asking permission from everybody. But yeah, that's what we're working on, and that's probably going to happen. Right now it's scheduled to happen on May 31st. That date may change, but it'll definitely happen this year.
What does your family think when you tell them these things? Like, oh, honey, I'm going to go to work. I got a couple guys jumping into one plane, getting out of the other. Like, what is the reaction to this? Are they so used to it?
On the really big ones, they're into it. Yeah, they were there when Luke jumped into the net. They were standing there at the net with everybody else, and they know Luke really well. So for those, the big ones, they're into it. But all the other stuff, my wife doesn't even know where I am. It's funny. I'll give her my travel schedule, and she knows and she'll call and go, are you in New York? Because everyone's calling me about some helicopter doing flips. And yeah, I told you. I was going to New York. I was going to do the cool thing. Outside this house, people think I'm cool. So, yeah, they sometimes they care, but not really. It's just, you know, dad's going to work. No big deal.
Sometimes they care.
Well, weirdly enough, I mean, the funny thing about it, as you talk about all this crazy stuff, has there been, like, something you did for a show or whatever or a movie where you sat back and where it like bombed, you're like, oh my god, that was so good, go out and go see it, people?
Yeah, there's been a couple of shows that weren't as successful as we hoped, for sure. I better not run down that list because I want to keep working. But you know, they're all fun. You know, the job, whether you're chasing cars under bridges or whatever, or you know, just getting beauty shots of LA or, you know, boat at sea, whatever you're doing, it's all fun. And I enjoy the work, so I don't, you know, really get too emotional about how well the projects do. Obviously, you want all of them to be big and successful and make lots of money, but they all can't, you know? So you just enjoy the part that you're involved in and live with that.
Are you looking forward to the new Top Gun movie?
Oh my goodness, yes, yeah. Yes, a friend of mine was the aerial coordinator for that. He worked on it for a long time, about a year and a half they've been shooting, and then they just finished recently. So, yeah, we're all really excited about that movie. I didn't work on it at all, not even one day, but him being so busy resulted in more work for me. So
there you go.
That was a win. And, you know, they're all great guys, and they worked really hard on it, and I'm really excited to see the result. It's going to be really cool, and all of us are Top Gun fans, right?
I feel like you have to be. I feel like you can't be in your industry and be like, man, I hate Maverick.
Yeah, right? I don't know how many times I've heard Top Gun quotes. We go a little more obscure in the helicopter community. We quote a movie called Blue Thunder. I don't know if you ever heard of Blue Thunder, but that one came out in the early 80s, and we all say those lines, but nobody knows what we're talking about. It was a helicopter movie.
You guys aren't going to the TV series Airwolf?
Ooh.
Are they remaking that one?
I don't know. But that was like the one helicopter TV show I could remember.
There was Magnum PI, which had a whole bunch of helicopter stuff in it, and then Riptide. Those are the two that I grew up watching that made me want to be a helicopter pilot.
We had so much fun talking to you, and it's just crazy the stories you have. If people want to get a hold of you or see what you're up to, what's the best places to find you?
Well, you mentioned my website. That's the best way. My company's called Airborne Images because I was a paratrooper, so I named it Airborne Images. So airborneimages.com, and that's where all the stuff is, and you can contact me through there. And there's a whole bunch of demo reels. As you saw, you can see a lot of the different jobs we've done and see what it looks like when helicopters go upside down.
Yeah, I got to say, everybody gives us their website. Yours is definitely, your website is like a must go to really kind of see what all the different things you do. So it's a very entertaining website. I will tell you that.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's hard to describe I'm not a super articulate guy. I'm obviously not a broadcaster, but it's hard for me to describe what we do. It's much, much better to be able to show everybody. So I'm happy that what we do is strong visual presence on the internet, and you can see for yourself what it looks like.
That's awesome. Yeah, we're thinking about filming the podcast with helicopters if you're interested. So
that's a tremendous idea. Yes, I'm interested.
Most of the interview was just, what?
Now you're starting to sound like helicopter pilots. I like it.
What?
Right.
Huh? I'm in, Scotty.
Aaron, thanks so much for your time, man. We really appreciate this, and we'll hope to talk to you in the future.
Thanks for having me.
And thanks, man. And this will be up next Monday. So I'll
Oh, cool. Hey, I got to ask you a question. Your theme song, that's a Gaelic Storm song, right?
Correct. You are you are the first to ever nail that.
Well, I love that band because, Fitzgerald is kind of Irish. Yeah, but I met the lead singer, Patrick, used to work in a bar in Santa Monica that I went into. So I kind of knew him. I knew who he was because he was a really interesting guy, and he was always singing while he was working and stuff. So I actually knew him before they started that band, believe it or not.
Wow. small world. Yeah, and you're the first one to ever recognize where that song is from.
I didn't figure you'd want to talk about that during the podcast, but that was something I wanted to ask you guys.
Oh, yeah. Good pickup, man. Good pickup. Very, very astute of you.
Cliff Clavin style. That's me.
All right. Makes our lives just, every time we talk to these people, makes my life seem so boring.
Yeah, it's like, I got to talk to my life insurance company tomorrow. I mean, what am I doing?
Yeah,
this world,
right before I was trying to figure out the new recycling schedule in Denville because they separate cardboard one day, and like that was my big dilemma today.
You go in the bar, you scream about that, and everybody's like, "Aaron, you're here! Thank God!"
But yeah, that was pretty awesome. It's funny how like he, I look him up, and the first thing I notice is Kirby flying around. I'm like, when you sent me the link, I'm like, hey, that's Kirby. Like he's flying around. Like everything kind of like seems to connect to one another. It's funny.
Yeah, we've had about four or five Red Bull athletes on the show. So it's been really cool, man. So, and hint, Red Bull, if you got sponsorship money just laying around,
Yeah, yeah.
We'll call ourselves Red Bull Shenanigans. We don't care.
Oh, I'll do that right now. We could be the Red Bull Sports Podcast, and I would be say gladly goodbye to the other 270 episodes of this show. See ya! It's been a good run.
Scott, what happened to your theme song? Red Bull gave me something better.
It gave me sponsorship. It gave me wings. Goodbye, Verbal Shenanigans.
Every episode starts with us saying how bad Monster is.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we generally do anyway, so we're just born for this job.
Absolutely.
Aaron Fitzgerald. Again, podcasting is just not that badass, man. It's just, it's not cool.
Maybe if I stand on my couch, I'll get some of that thrill. You think? I mean,
you're like, hold on. I just got to set up real quick. And you just raise the microphone as high as possible and you stand on your couch.
Yeah, jump on it a little bit, at least until Izzy yells downstairs, stop making that noise, and then I'll have to stop, but that'll be my thrill.
That, you know? Yeah, that's the thrill. Not getting caught. Not getting caught, like the secrecy of doing the podcast like this.
Yeah, she told me to stop, but I still did it for another 2 minutes.
I'm thick. I'm crazy. That was cool, man. But, Berlo, what you got?
This is a story I've been holding on to for a little couple weeks now.
I think I know where we're going.
No, we're going to save that one for the following week.
Oh, good,
with the other guests. But I got a different story for it. I kind of want to see how you would feel in this situation. I went for a haircut over at Great Clips and all. I kind of regular hair. I just to tell them to buzz them a certain way or whatever. But I get in a chair with this girl. I don't have a regular person.
You got in the chair with the girl? Already.
No.
What were you trying to play? What were you trying to play? Your turn.
She spun the bottle. There's nothing I could have done. Law says I had to go through with it. But I'm sitting in the chair with the girl about to do my haircut, and she's talking to the other girl, and she's saying, yeah, after this, I got to go home. I'm so sorry, I got to do this. And the girl's just like, yeah, it's fine. Don't worry about it, whatever. And then she proceeds to tell a story how she needs to get home because she was in a car accident a few years ago, which really hurt her brain. And she's on certain brain medications, and they have to up the dosage. And she's talking about how her mind's not in the right place right now. And she knows she can't go through a full day like this. Meanwhile, every time she's saying this, she's saying it in full voice. She's not even like whispering it to the girl across the floor. She's literally saying in normal voice with me in the chair. Every once in a while, in between the story, turning over, looking at my face and saying, but don't worry, you're going to be fine. You're going to be fine. And she also kind of did like mid haircut, starting to tell the story where there's like nowhere to go from this. But it's one of those things where I'm somewhat biting my lip and I'm playing it cool. I'm like, yeah, no, it's fine. I understand. But in the back of my head, I'm still kind of like, I had this vision of her having like almost like a Vietnam flashback and stabbing me with some scissors at this point.
So now as this is going on, you're hearing this, are you just looking forward, trying to just pretend it's not going on, just praying that is she cutting hair? Any like, is she pulling your hair a little bit tighter, like at all, or getting weird? She's just perfection still.
I mean, she's doing fine with the haircut and all that. I got a pretty straightforward haircut. It's just buzz. It's seven on the sides and four on the top, if I recall. But I mean, I'm keeping a cool voice and I'm saying everything's all right. But there's a part of me that's kind of like, did you really need to start my haircut with me announcing these head things and all? Couldn't have you just said, once you got the approval, yeah, you can go home early, just say goodbye because my brain might go to a different place.
So she's like kind of like at her wit's end, just grabbing your hair, cutting it. Like, and she's like, I got to get out of here. I need my brain meds.
But she keeps on bringing it up as she's cutting. So it's like, you cannot be comfortable at any point. There is no, like, she doesn't change it to how's the weather out there. She just keeps on at full blast talking about her brain medicines and the accident she was in 2 years ago, which makes her need stronger brain medicine.
So what's the reaction around you? Like, here's a place with multiple hairdressers and whatnot. No reaction? They're just like, yeah, cool.
There's nothing. It's literally just the three of us, the girl cutting my hair, myself, and the other girl in the place. It was like a month. It was like the Monday after Christmas where most people have work and I had a day off just to get a haircut. But I mean, the girl itself, she just like, ah, yeah, I understand totally. Yeah, yeah, if you need brain medication, yeah, you should go home. So like, she just naturally talking to her, but at the same time, there's no kind of brain action going on between them, and they're like, maybe we shouldn't say this in front of the stranger who's in our hair cutting place to make sure he's calm.
Now, how did the haircut turn out?
Haircut turned out fine. I mean, like I said, I mean, I think that's another reason why it didn't bug out. If I had like a really special like bob or weave or something like that,
oh, maybe you should totally get back a bob and weave. What are you getting, the boxer's haircut? Yeah, let me get a bob here and a weave over there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, my hair is not like anything special to note.
Can you so, please like, get a weave?
I think
can
it's you very forgiving.
Wait till March. Get a weave. 50 points.
But I'm fine. The haircut came out fine. And like I said, why I'm so forgiving is it's just a quick buzz kind of haircut. But it still was just so unsettling. Like, she was just so naturally. It's like, I had to tell my friend about my brain medicine, but I'm sure this guy would be cool with it.
I dread that scenario. One, because I don't even like dentist, hairstylist, the small talk. It's awkward to sit there getting a haircut in complete silence. But then there's the other side of it. Like, I don't want you to talk to me that much. It's like the bedside manner of a hair cutter, like,
mm-hmm.
like a hairstylist. Like, yeah, I don't want you to be like, and we're in silence the whole time, because that's kind of weird. But I don't want you asking me about like, hey, what are you doing today? What's going on this weekend? How was your Christmas? Like, after a while, you're like, I just cut my hair. Just please,
yeah.
Let me get out of here. So like, I don't know what the happy medium is, but I've always been awkward like the with the small talk. I never know exactly like what to say, and I feel like they know that I'm being short with them. I'm kind of like, the weekend was good. Weather's crazy, huh? Yeah.
And then like once in a while they'll be like, "So what do you do for a living?" And it's like, "Well, I work on phones and all." Phones? That must be interesting. I'm like, "You want me to tell you about my work?" I mean, it's... Maybe they gotta do something like a improv class where they have a fishbowl with like different subjects, and you just pick out one. And it's like, all right, this is the only thing we could talk about today. It's not silent.
You should have at least told her, yeah, I'm a podcaster, so we could have got like at least a brain injury hair artist as a listener.
Scott, never guess who I got scheduled next week.
It's Cindy from Sports Clips. Yeah. I mean, I'm a podcaster. Oh, you make a living doing well. I mean, if Sports Clips wants to sponsor us, we're open, but you know.
And then you get the, if you brought that up, oh, I'm gonna look you up and listen. I'm like, no, you're not.
No.
No, you're not.
You know how much we've been told that.
Well, I'll just give you your $3 tip and we'll be on our business, okay?
You know what I also don't like? I don't like where I go. I go to Sports Clips with them. What do you go to? What's yours? Something Clips?
Great Clips is over by Great my Clips. Place.
Yep. So, yeah, we have them up here. So it's just probably the same thing. Like, I always go to pay. No one has cash anymore. So I go to, like, do the debit card thing. And I hate when they're, like, right in front of you and you're doing the tip. Do you ever get this? I'm always like, can you like go away so I could like do the tip? And I always tip like fine, like at least 20% usually or whatever it is. But it's like, I feel like I don't like that like staring at me while I'm filling out my typing in my tip or whatever thing. I don't like that.
Yeah, it's one of the things I don't like about like, it's really cool like all these like iPads or whatever where they now like. Places like breweries and stuff like that can allow you to play credit cards and stuff like that. But it's always, they'll bring up to, and here's a screen, and every tip, it's like, 25, 30. It's like ridiculous. It's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. And then you feel awkward if you got to hit the custom tip and then type it in where they're like, oh, you're going to be one of those people, huh?
Another lost option for you. Here's another tip. You enter in listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
Yeah, I feel instead of giving money tips, I'm just going to write in our our Apple Podcast link.
Very appreciate. Here's
a tip for you.
Or like every time you get a sign for a credit card, don't sign your name. Just write the link into the signature. I think
The bank knows me. That's fine. That's fine.
Where all the bank listens to me, so it's kind of like a big deal. Mm-hmm. You know, like it's like verification. It's like verification.
We're like the 10th best podcast that Chase Bank listens to.
Oh man. All right, man. Another good week in the books, man. I think it's time to head on out of here. It's been a good start to 2020. I don't know if there's a nickname for 2020, but we've had a lot of really good guests so far, and we got another good one next week and even the following week after that. So we're really working on keeping the content coming and trying to stick to our once a week schedule and whatnot. So Berlo, anything to promote before we go?
Well, if you're looking for good podcasts along with us, I would say the Loser Podcast.
No. Do not promote another podcast.
But Scott, what is if I promote the episode that you were on?
Oh, okay. All right, that's fine.
Yeah, so American Loser hosts KP Burke, really funny comedian now in New Jersey. He hosts it every week with his father, LP. He brings on different comedian friends, such as Mr. Scott Brennan, and they go over some of the biggest quote-unquote losers in American history. If you're looking specifically our friend Scott, look at Nikola Tesla as an episode from American Loser. I mean, it was a really fun podcast, but all in all, check them out. They're really cool on any of your podcast listening sites. It's called American Loser.
I had a blast on the show. Tesla is one of the people who really... really, really interests me. I always found his life fascinating and whatnot. So it was really cool to sit down with KP and his dad. They do a great job over there. So check out American Loser Podcast. I'm going to promote something, I guess, a little different. I'm going to promote a fundraiser that I participate in basically every year. I missed a couple years because of scheduling and whatnot. But I'm once again doing the Polar Bear Plunge in New Jersey. Berlo, you participated probably like 4 or 5 years back, 4 years maybe, something like that.
Yeah, four years, I think.
Something like that. So all the money goes to Special Olympics, and they do a great job. So I'll be jumping into the Atlantic Ocean on February 22nd. So if there is anybody out there listening to that finds Special Olympics near and dear to their heart, it's a part of my family that we try to raise money for each year. Go to Special Olympics Polar Bear Plunge. If you look up Polar Bear Plunge and you look up the team Frozen Clovers, and you look up my name, Scott Brennan, you could donate to my page or just the team's page overall. I really don't care which one you do. But if you want to support a really good cause, they do a nice job. And every year they raise like over $2 million, $3 million. It's pretty amazing just for like a bunch of idiots jumping in the ocean. So it is a really good cause. So go check that out, and I'll post it on our Facebook and whatnot. So I want to thank Aaron for coming on the show tonight. I thought it was an absolutely fascinating interview. Really good guy. I guess that's it. I would like to also promote the other places you can go find us. Discovery County Network, comingrightup.org, Denville Radio, and then basically every podcast platform you can imagine. iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, all that stuff. BS Podcast Network. We're all over the place. The best thing you can do is leave a review for us. It really helps. It helps matriculate the podcast, if you will, into more like, hey, if you like this, you'll check this. And it allows listeners to click on our things and see what we do. We got 270-something episodes. Go back and listen to them. We've had... there's got to be someone you're interested in somewhere along the line that we've spoken to, athletes, musicians, poop inspectors, you know, someone who thought they were a goat for a couple weeks.
In fact, if you have a genre you know we haven't done, please tell us.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's true, too. Yeah. Give us the recommendations. Hey, I want to see this on the podcast. We will talk to them. We'll basically talk to anybody because we don't really like ourselves, as you can see through our
absolutely
our spin the bottle and 7 minutes in heaven discussion. So that's it, guys. That's it. That's all I got to say to you tonight. Life is funny. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back. And we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Go home and kiss your couch for me.
The seat.
Always gonna be here anyway. Thinking of you's working up my appetite. Looking forward to a little afternoon delight. Rubbing sticks and stones together make the sparks ignite. And the thought of loving you is getting so excited. Skyrockets in flight.